101.3 FM. This is Fine Music Radio.
People of Note on Fine Music Radio is proudly brought to you each week at this time by Peter Turin Productions. You're listening to Fine Music Radio. Rodney Trudgeon greeting you and welcoming you to this week's edition of People of Note. As you may or may not have seen or heard, the Gilbert and Sullivan Society in Cape Town, Cape Town GNS, are presenting the Yeomen of the Guard, opening on the 10th of August and running through for a while for a number of performances. And so with me in the studio is Alistair Coburn, who is not only the musical director of the opera, but also the production coordinator of GNS, this marvelous society which has been around for so long. And Alistair, welcome, first of all.
Hello, Rodney. Nice to be here.
It must be exciting for you because you were really affected by COVID, weren't you? The society closed down. You were going to do the Pirates of Penzance.
We were going to do Pirates, and unfortunately we couldn't, and then everything delayed and delayed and delayed, and this is the first production we're doing in 5 years.
Is it 5 years?
5 years since we last did South Pacific, yes.
So everybody must be thrilled to be
yes,
back
nice,
on stage.
Nice being back on stage again with everyone, yes, you're right.
And this opera, am I right in saying it's one of their most serious operas, although there's a lightness of touch to it. Mm. But, I mean, for example, the Act One finale, the chorus that ends Act One, could be longer than an opera, a real
you're right,
opera.
You're absolutely right. I see this as being the true English romantic opera. You know, there's so little in the 19th century from England. I mean, there was this character that did, I think his name was Balfe, Michael Balfe.
Oh, yes.
He was an Irishman, and he did The Bohemian Girl. And from that, there was this famous aria, I dwelt in Marble Halls.
Yes, I dreamt I dwelt in Marble Halls.
That's correct, yes. And, you know, apart from that, if you analyze and you look, there was nothing else in the romantic opera field from England. And here, all of a sudden now, we have all these Gilbert and Sullivan works, and of those, The Yeoman of the Guard is definitely a real opera, a romantic opera.
Because it has a tragic ending,
it
unlike
does.
Any of
very
the other
very sad ending. We weep every time we see it.
But from the point of view, you as a conductor, from the point of view of the orchestra, it's much more richly scored, isn't it, than some of the others?
It's
would you
beautifully
agree?
Scored. You know, Sullivan was actually amazing. He actually studied in Leipzig at the conservatoire there, which was founded by Mendelssohn. In actual fact, he overlapped with Grieg as a boy of about 16, 17. He was there on a bursary. And he picked up this whole tradition of writing beautifully for the orchestra, scoring the woodwind, for instance. I mean, could be Mendelssohn himself, you
yes,
know. You
yes.
also hear that in Iolanthe, you know, the Fairies Chorus.
Yes, yes, whenever I play the overture to Iolanthe, I say you can hear that Mendelssohn influenced
absolutely.
Sullivan.
So he came out of that tradition, you know, of German school, and he brought this tradition of wonderful orchestration. I think, you know, I actually said in one of my little articles I wrote about this that even Schubert, at his very best, I don't think he could have surpassed some of the woodwind writing of Sullivan.
Gosh, and that's saying something.
That's saying something, yeah. Because I love Schubert, one of my favorite composers.
Maybe we'll hear some later
thank
on.
Thank you, yes.
But Alistair, on that subject, the overture to Yeoman is one of the, I think, only two that Sullivan actually wrote out, because he always got his assistant to do that.
That's right, yeah.
And it's quite a virtuoso overture.
It's a wonderful piece, a standalone piece. It's actually in sonata form, and it's not just a potpourri of all the melodies from the opera like you would normally find in some of those overtures. This is a real dramatic piece that stands beautifully on its own and should be performed, I think, more often in concerts.
Yes.
It would be wonderful to hear it as an introduction to one of our symphony concerts,
absolutely.
For instance.
And it would go down well there because, it as you said, it's a sonata form overture. It's got a bit of oomph and
it
body
does,
and
yeah.
structure and all that.
Now, it actually proves, I think, that Sullivan was very, very well steeped in this whole field of classical structure, form, and sound in music. He knew what he was doing.
But now, once again, Yeoman has lots of lovely... I love the fact that in Act Two, for example, I think he uses limericks. I know he might have used them elsewhere. A man who would woo a fair maid
that's
must
right,
apprentice
yes.
himself
to
the
tray. That's right,
and
yes.
practice all day in methodical way how to flatter, cajole, and persuade.
Absolutely.
Isn't that lovely?
It's lovely, yes. Yeah.
As a little limerick yeah. that Gilbert
I think Gilbert was very, very good when he actually... researched and the sort of style of the words that he needed, you know. Mm-hmm. In Yeoman, of course, he was trying to almost look back at the Shakespearean English as well. And so he comes up with some wonderful words which we had to go and look up and think, what is a word like pother? What is this pother? And it actually is commotion, but you never hear the word anymore.
You never hear it. But Gilbert was brilliant at that, wasn't he? I mean, he was the most superb writer of poetry, all sorts of things.
Very, very clever. I mean, the one song, that beautiful song, you know, When Our Gallant Norman Foes, it actually tells the whole story of the Tower of London from William the Conqueror and how the tower was built, and it stands there as a sentinel over London, you know. Yes. Beautiful lyrics, really fantastic.
I think that's the opening aria, isn't it?
That is the very first big aria, yes. In the piece. No. The opening aria is actually done by Phoebe at the spinning wheel. And then that's the fourth number in the piece with Dame Carruthers telling the story of the tower.
When you rehearse something like this with a society, you do work a long way in advance, don't you? Because of the fact it's an amateur group.
Yes, we do. We start off, obviously, and try and do the auditions as early as possible. We do the auditions, find the cast, etc., and then we set our dates for rehearsals. And it's normally over a three-month period. We'll spend a month roughly doing the music, first of all, just the music, and we try and teach all the music. And then we start moving into what we call blocking, and the next month is all blocking the various scenes, etc. And then we'll try to move into an area of 3 or 4 weeks of just running the show constantly, or scenes, big scenes from the show, to get ourselves ready for the stage.
And you've got a veteran, may I say, veteran director in Teddy Davies.
Unfortunately, yes, Teddy was meant to be doing it. There has been a problem. Teddy was suffering with health issues, and about a month ago, he had to actually pull out. He said, I just can't carry on doing this. His doctor had given him instructions not to. So immediately our thought was, who now? And we went to our favorite lady, Kyla Thorburn, who has done the most wonderful work for us in the past. And she had actually done the choreography for Teddy's previous productions, the two previous productions he had done. And so she knew the show pretty well. She's come in and she's amazing. She's just taken over and setting all the scenes and making sure that they... She's working it a little bit according to what Teddy had done previously. But of course, there's her own touch. You have to have that as
you a director. You have to, absolutely. I want to ask you, Alistair, what exactly a yeoman is. But before that, let's have a taste of Yeoman of the Guard. And you're going to play your society and our orchestra, the CBO, at their 70th gala anniversary concert.
Yes. I thought it would be rather lovely. I just adore the Cape Philharmonic Orchestra. They're the most wonderful people, and they're so versatile. And it was fabulous having them accompany our 70th anniversary concert. And incidentally, Rodney, you were the master of 70s for that concert, so you'll remember it very well.
I remember it very well. Amazing.
And I thought, you know, here we can feature the society. You can hear a big chorus. You can hear a solo within this chorus as well. It's a double chorus, actually, the yeomen on their own and then the citizens. And that's the Tower Warders number, the second item in the whole opera, and, of course, accompanied by our wonderful CPO.
Story of how here is not so spent, and how days are not so faded, but that we with one consent were our love and invaded, still would face a foreign foe, as in days of long ago, still.
That's music from Act One of Yeoman of the Guard by Gilbert and Sullivan. A chorus right at the beginning, Tower Warders Under Orders. Mm. And there we heard the chorus of the GNS Society in Cape Town, the Cape Philharmonic, conducted by my guest today, Alistair Coburn, at that memorable concert, Alistair, the 70th anniversary in the City
Thank
Hall
you.
With the Cape Philharmonic. I presume the Cape Philharmonic is with you again now for Yeoman.
Yes, no, we've got the full orchestra playing. I wouldn't want to do it without them.
No.
They're so wonderful to work with. They really are.
And the fact that they can adapt from the symphony season and the operas to something really as specialized, because one can't underestimate the music of Sullivan.
You know, this orchestra is absolutely amazing. You've seen how they move from opera to musicals to ballet to symphony concerts to community work. You know, it's actually amazing. And they'll play their bit of jazz when they need to as well. They're incredibly versatile. They really are.
Now, Alistair, just before the break, I said some people have come to me and said, what is a yeoman? Y-E-O-M-A-N. And one maybe can imagine what a yeoman looks like. But you've got something of a write-up on them, of what a yeoman is.
The Yeoman of the Guard actually is an elite military and very ancient military corps. They were formed in the late 1400s by King Henry the VII, before the famous King Henry the VIII.
Yeah.
And he formed them actually as the Royal Bodyguard. And from then, right through to the present, they are still the Royal Bodyguard. They appear in ceremonial occasions and so on with the King of England, etc., King now and the Queen before that. He took a few of the yeomen and decided to send them across to the Tower of London as warders to look after the tower as well. And traditionally, they've been there ever since as well. So you've got these two corps. The one is the Royal Bodyguard, and then you've got the Tower Warders. They wear the same basic uniform, but they have different functions. So in the Tower of London, we've still got today the Tower Warders wearing this magnificent red uniform. And their main role today is just to actually be as sort of tour guides and take the guests around and so on, visitors to the tower. But traditionally in the old days, of course, they would look after the prisoners and so on.
Ahead of their execution.
Well, absolutely.
Possibly, yeah.
And you know, that's the interesting thing. I looked up at this. It was rather fascinating for me to look, what was this whole thing about the executions and when did they happen and where did they happen? There were 22 executions in the last 1,000 years. That's all. Everyone thinks there were a lot more. There were only 22 within the tower itself, on Tower Green. Two of them were King Henry the VIII's wives, Anne Boleyn and Catherine Howard. And the last execution actually to happen inside the tower was quite recently, in the 1940s. It was actually a Nazi spy. And this man was executed by firing squad, not by beheading. I think that would have been a little bit too archaic.
I just want to talk briefly about their costume, because it is a distinctive costume. It's quite unlike any of the other costumes in British sort of pomp and circumstance.
It's amazing. It actually has got this long red almost skirt, lot of braid on it. On the chest, there's a wonderful insignia of the royal coat of arms and so on. They wear this black, almost like a raised hat. It's not really a top hat, but it is a black hat with a beautiful trim of ribbons around it in three different colors,
red, flat,
white, and blue.
It's fairly flat,
yes. Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, they wear a funny big pantaloon type thing, pants underneath, and red stockings. And on their shoes, they have a rosette, also with colors on it, red, white, and blue colors. And they carry a pike. This tall staff with like a chopper on the top, you know, and that was traditionally in the old days a weapon. Today, at his course, it's just ceremonial.
Yeah. This might be a stupid question, mainly because I can't remember. Do yeomen appear in this opera?
Yes, they do. We've got 12 yeomen as the chorus of yeomen. And then there are two others. There's the sergeant at arms, and he's a yeoman. He's the senior yeoman, one of our principals. And then
is that Merrill, Sergeant
that's
Merrill?
That's Sergeant Merrill, that's right. And then, of course, his son, Leonard Merrill, is arriving to join the yeoman. But in order to free the Colonel Fairfax from as a prisoner, they actually masquerade him as the son, Leonard. So he also dresses up in a yeoman costume. So you will see 14 yeomen on stage at any given time.
What about making the costumes? Have you got
we
some
We had
brilliant?
Them all from previous productions.
Oh, have you? Okay.
It was one of the criteria. They're so expensive to make. And when we looked at what should we do, I said, well, the first thing we need to do is make sure we've got the costumes. And our costumes are all stored in the Artscape facility at Epping. And I went out there and checked, and yes, we found the yeoman costumes. They said, right, now we can move ahead.
Because it really looks very impressive on stage.
Oh, they're wonderful. They're beautiful.
So that's the yeoman. And the other characters within are, for example, you mentioned Leonard. Colonel Fairfax, it's quite a complicated story, isn't it? The
in
comings
a way,
and goings.
If you actually take it fairly simply, Colonel Fairfax is a prisoner in the Tower.
And he's due to be executed.
And he's due to be executed in an hour for some false sorcery charges by a cousin of his. And he asks the lieutenant of the Tower if he can actually get married very urgently, because if he gets married, he won't have to leave his estate to his cousin. The estate will then certainly go to something else. I'm not quite sure. They never mentioned what. But he would then pay whatever bride a sum of money for being a bride for 1 hour. And the lieutenant goes out and finds this young strolling singer, and she goes in blindfolded and marries Colonel Fairfax. But in the meantime, Sergeant Merrill and his son and daughter decide they want to free this man because he was a great comrade of theirs at arms. And they masquerade him as the son. They manage to get him to escape from the jail cell. And, of course, he is now one of the yeomen. And Elsie, his bride, doesn't know who he is. In the meantime, further on in the opera, she falls in love with Leonard, not realizing that she's already married to him as Fairfax. You know, so it's a bit complicated in that way.
But wonderfully complicated.
Very wonderful.
In a way
so,
that makes you think as it goes along. What's always struck me about the JNS Society is the standard of costumes and scenery. You really do have it always looks good. Your productions always look good.
Yeah, we try to actually be as professional as we possibly can. And I think one of the things is, apart from good performances and using good accompaniment like a professional orchestra, you have to make sure that your stage looks good as well. Mm-hmm. We're keeping the stage fairly simple this time, but you're going to see quite a replica of some of the Tower of London with battlements and so on. And we're using some of the stage machinery, one of the big lifts and so on. So you'll see people crossing over the top of the lifts behind battlements, etc. And I think that is going to look pretty impressive. But the costumes, a lot of them are really glorious, you know, and I think that adds beautiful color to the stage. And then, of course, I must just mention we've got wonderful Fahim Bardin, our lighting designer, and he's going to make magic with the stage lighting, color, and so on the stage, and that really adds to it as well.
Just a quick practical question. Mm. Will it be in the Opera House or the
in
theater?
In the Opera House, yes.
Oh, so it's in the big Opera House.
Yes, it's the first time we're doing a Gilbert and Sullivan production in the Opera House.
Oh,
we've
really?
Done our musicals there, but never a big GNS. The last time we were in the theater wasn't available to us, so that's why we were given the Opera House.
Okay. Alistair, let's have another piece of music. Now, I gather one of your secrets is that you're mad about the King's Singers.
I love
who
the King's
isn't,
Singers.
Who isn't?
We had them out here a couple of, well, quite a few years ago when I was working here, actually, and I brought them out. And they did several concerts in the Opera House. You may have been at some of those concerts. But the interesting thing was we became very, very friendly. And they asked me on one of their days off a Saturday if I would take them up the mountain. And I remember so clearly, we looked at the mountain on that morning and it was very misted over. And I said, you know, it's too dangerous to go up the mountain. But Lion's Head was clear. I said, let's climb Lion's Head. So off we went up Lion's Head. And I think they found it quite a slog. But we got to the top and I had photographs of them at the top and so on. And it was really wonderful. So the King's Singers have always been one of my favorites. And the piece I've chosen to play is You Are the New Day. Which is, I think, a beautiful piece, almost classical in a way.
Especially and the way they do it, the way they do the harmonies.
And in a way, you know, it's almost applicable to what we're going through at the moment in our country, isn't it? You are the new day with a new government and so on. Let's see what happens.
He said, holding thumbs. Okay, here the King Singers.
You are the new day. You are the new day. Sun in time for dawn, let the birds all hail the morning. Love of life will urge me say, you are the new day. When I lay me down at night, knowing we must pay Tucker, that this night might stay yesterday. Thoughts that we as humans saw could slow worlds and end it all lie around me where they fall before the new day. Just these days in which to be. Love of life means hope for me. Born on a new day. You are the new day.
I think I can safely say the unique sound of the King's Singers, You Are the New Day. And it was another choice of my guest on this week's edition of People of Note here on Fine Music Radio, Alistair Coburn, who is not only the musical director, but the production coordinator of GNS here in Cape Town. Their production of The Yeoman of the Guard, the Gilbert and Sullivan Opera, opens on the 10th of August here at the Opera House. And I want to talk a bit about the society. I gather it's 77 years old.
That's right. Was established in 1947, actually, incidentally, with a production of The Yeoman of the Guard in the City Hall in Cape Town.
Was that their first production?
That was their very first production ever. That's rather interesting. And they've done it, I think, probably over the years about 9 times. This will be the 5th time I am doing The Yeoman of the Guard for them. So 5 of their 9 I am doing.
But you've been with them for 110 years, haven't you?
Nearly. Actually, 49 years this year.
Year is your big 50.
That's right. 1975, I actually got involved as an accompanist for them, and then very soon afterwards as musical director, and I've been doing shows with them ever since.
But the interesting thing is with the GNS is that you don't only do Gilbert and Sullivan, you do musicals as well, don't you?
No, we do wonderful musicals. Yes, we've done some very, very big ones on the Opera House stage largely, My Fair Lady, mm-hmm. Fiddler on the Roof, Annie, South Pacific, Oklahoma. Some lovely shows, really fabulous.
But GNS always comes first, doesn't it?
It does, in a way. You know, we used to do exclusively GNS, and then we realized that audiences were dwindling a little bit, and the musicals help us to actually sustain the society from a financial point of view. And then in between, probably every third year now, since the last 15 years or so, we've been doing a GNS with a musical 2 years in between.
All right. Mm. And have you done pretty well all the GNS operas?
I've done... I think the Society has done all except for Utopia Limited. They did that once as a concert version. I don't think they've ever done the Grand Duke.
Right.
That
right.
is just hardly ever done by anyone.
Well, we know that those two, including Utopia, their relationship had soured so badly.
Very badly. But the last two they did, and at that stage they were such bad friends. I mean, they communicated by letter, you know, and a courier dragging a letter from one side of the London to the other. They were refused to talk to each other.
Yeah, it was horrible. And I think their last great success was The Gondoliers, wasn't it?
The Gondoliers came just after Yeoman of the Guard, yes.
So you've also done the very early ones. I know you've done Trial by Jury.
Oh, we've done all of those. HMS Pinafore, The Pirates of Penzance, Mikado.
Princess Ida.
It's a wonderful show.
In Patience. Fact,
Princess Ida, can I just say, I think it's actually one of the others that is almost very close to a real opera. You know, the music is stunning, but it hardly ever gets done.
No, you never get it.
Patience, also a beautiful show, lovely. Mm-hmm. Radigore.
Of course.
Yeah, that was our last GNS we did, Radigore.
Before the pandemic.
Before pandemic hit us, yes.
And that is, okay, that's filled with comedy, but also the orchestration there is what we were talking about earlier, demonstrates
beautiful,
Sullivan's.
Absolutely beautiful.
Right at the beginning in the overture, the sort of spooky music
that's
that
right,
you hear.
Yeah. And then the lovely madrigal he wrote in the middle. You know, he was a great madrigal writer. In Yeoman of the Guard, we've got that beautiful madrigal, Strange Adventure, which actually Sullivan was now trying to recreate the old Shakespearean style, you know, and he did it very well. And it's an a cappella piece with just an introduction by the orchestra. Really, really beautiful.
But he also, am I right, there's a madrigal in the Mikado as well.
Brightly Dawns Our Wedding Day.
There you go, which is unaccompanied, isn't it?
That's right.
I mean, everyone, I think the Mikado is without doubt their most popular opera, I think rightly
it
so.
It is. It's a wonderful piece.
But the Yeoman has, as we said something earlier, an aura of a real grand English opera.
Right.
With all the humour that happens in it.
Sullivan, of course, aspired to writing a grand opera.
Yes,
and he did
all
write
his life.
One. He wrote one called Ivanhoe, 2 years after Yeoman, in fact, based on the Walter Scott novel. Mm-hmm. And although it contains some wonderful music, but it's very long and very long-winded, and it wasn't a great success. So I would say that Yeoman is still his finest piece.
Yeah. Well, I agree with that, absolutely. And the cast, the people who are members of the Gilbert and Sullivan Society, are, as we know, all amateurs. And yet, when you see them on stage after your months of rehearsal, they really rise to the occasion, don't they? And
they do.
It. Their singing is good, their acting is good.
We've got quite a few newcomers this year who have never done a work with us before, which is rather lovely, knowing that young people are still interested in coming in. And some of them are very, very young and new. Regina Milan, she studied opera at Stellenbosch University, and she's playing the big role of Elsie, and she's a beautiful singer. She really is, and a lovely actress. And then our favorite, Sean Atterbury, that's done many of our big soprano roles. This year, she's not doing a soprano role. She's doing Phoebe, which is actually a mezzo role, which is rather fun, you know, for her.
And can she do it?
She's doing it beautifully.
Wonderful.
She's really got a lovely voice. Yeah, she is. And then, of course, we've got Stephen LaRue, who studied opera at UCT, and he's doing Sergeant Merrill again. He did it last time for us. And likewise, David Bolton, playing Wilfred Shadbolt, the jailer.
He's been around for ages.
He's done several for us, yes. Yeah, and he was our last Wilfred Shadbolt as well in 2012.
Gosh, so it's good to know that you're getting new people in like this. And then let's go to another piece of music, Alistair. Yes. And we are going to Schubert, which I gather is another of your secret sort of
passions. I absolutely love Schubert. And I personally, as a pianist, I play a lot of Schubert. I really love playing him. And also, the Lieder are so fantastic. The accompaniments are wonderful. I mean, Schubert wrote over 600 songs.
I know,
and all that jammed into a space of about 32 years he was when he died. So, Lieder and the piano works and, his symphonies and so on, they're all magnificent. They really are. So, I thought I'll choose one of the impromptus. It's the famous G-flat major impromptu, which is very, very tricky to play because your entire melody is almost played with the little finger on the right hand with an accompaniment in the lower fingers of the right hand.
And yet it sounds so simple. And that's the trick, isn't it?
That's the trick, yes. And I've got a wonderful recording here, Mitsuku Ushida.
Oh, great.
She is fantastic with her Schubert. So that would be my choice.
Thank you.
Mitsuo Uchida there, the wonderful pianist playing the impromptu in G-flat major by Schubert. And another choice of my guest on People of Note this week, Alistair Coburn. We're talking about Gilbert and Sullivan and the opera The Yeomen of the Guard, which opens here at Artscape in the Opera House on the 10th of August. Alistair, I'm intrigued, by the way, to hear more about your background, because you're a trained musician, basically, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I was professional for many years before I moved into the theatre field.
You did, because when I came to Cape Town, you were working here at Artscape.
That's right, yes. I started off, actually, when I left school, my parents just couldn't afford university training at all, so I started off as working as a clerk in the provincial government, and then eventually I was studying music just privately. Just to tell you as a matter of interest how music started in my life, because my family were fairly music illiterate. There was not much classical music at all, occasional Strauss waltz, and that would be about it. But somewhere along the line, I must have been about 10 or 11 years old, and an aunt of mine, she had been attending some of the Gilbert and Sullivan shows, and she loved Gilbert and Sullivan, and she went and bought a disc. It was an old LP disc of The Yeoman of the Guard, and she was playing this at home, and I actually sat listening to this music and thinking, this is something different, this is wonderful. And I would actually say that The Yeoman of the Guard was probably my introduction to classical music, and
as a whole
from the very beginning. And since that day, I suddenly remembered, I said to my mother, I want to learn the piano. I want to actually go and learn music. And my mother allowed me to go, and I went to a wonderful teacher, Sona Whiteman, who was the mother of Sybil Whiteman, Sybil Morris Whiteman, who passed away just last year.
And who did a lot for us.
Yeah, did a lot for you, yes. And her mother was my piano teacher. And after a few years, I was just studying music casually, didn't do music as a subject at school or anything like that. I was working at the provincial government, and Mrs. Whiteman said to me, do you enjoy your job? I said, no, I don't. She said, well, why don't you actually study music? I said, music? Can I? She said, yes, let's start you off now. I'm going to actually enter you for one of the diplomas with the Trinity College of London, and let's try and get you qualified in something. And I did that, did the Royal Schools diploma, and then I managed to get a job in teaching. And I started off teaching for 2 years in Belleville at a primary school. And then I got the most wonderful job at Pinelands High School, where I eventually became head of music.
Oh, so music, you were teaching music?
I was music there, schools, yes. Yeah. And I went to Pinelands High, I was there for about 16 years, and it was there also that my love of musicals developed, because we had a wonderful director of musicals that we used to do every second year, a major musical, Oliver, Oklahoma, Annie Get Your Gun, you name
ones,
it. We did all of those at Pinelands High. And while I was actually at Pinelands High studying, I studied with UNISA for a BMus degree and eventually qualified in that. So that's my qualifications and my background in music.
And now, what you said just now about playing Schubert impromptus, you still keep your piano
I love playing.
Up and
I
running.
I play quite a lot at home just for myself. I'm not a concert pianist or anything, but I love playing for myself. And I used to do a fair amount of accompanying, especially of singers. So the Schubert Lieder were especially very close to me.
Okay, we're coming to one of those in a moment, but I still want to investigate you here. What about conducting, which is a different kettle of fish completely?
It was actually the Gilbert and Sullivan Society that got me into that, because I started off as an accompanist with them initially, and then about 3 years into being with them as an accompanist, my predecessor, Christopher Dew, decided that he wanted to pull out, and he said, take over as musical director. So I started off conducting. In those days, very simply, we used to have a piano, a keyboard, and some drums to accompany the shows at the Claremont Civic Center.
Wow.
It was in about 1979, 1980 that I said we need an orchestra. And I gathered together a group of amateur musicians. Well, not they weren't all amateurs. Some of them were professional. But it was basically a put-together ad hoc orchestra of about 22 people. And that was our first involvement with orchestra. And since then, we've never, ever looked back. We've done everything with orchestra since then.
Did it come naturally to you, conducting, or was it a struggle
initially? It was just very much a sort of, you know, beating two and three in a bar type of thing, you know, and I think I must have been dreadfully square. When I actually joined Artscape and I left teaching and I came here, I started off as the director of the old K-Pop Orchestra, the administrative director.
Right.
I used to sit in on rehearsals and watch conductors at work, and that was what really, I think, taught me more about conducting than anything else. Mm-hmm. There was a wonderful man, Reinhard Schwarz, the conductor, the German chap, that used to come out here and do opera and symphony concerts for us, and he gave me some lessons, and he was really amazing. He taught me so much. In fact, I remember it was Vetter Wise and myself went to him for master classes together.
Right, Vetter Wise. Conducting the Cape Town Philharmonic must be, in a sense, a treat because you're working with a professional orchestra.
Yeah.
I dare say they help you as well
with beats or little you know, starting off going way back, My Fair Lady in 2008 was the first time I ever worked with a professional orchestra, the Cape Philharmonic. And I was terribly nervous. I remember coming in front of them, and they just put me so at ease. The leader of the orchestra was Patrick Goodwin, that's right. And he was wonderful. He kept on saying to me, Alistair, try doing this and try doing that, and maybe I suggest instead of beating two there, beat four, and so on. And he taught me so much as the leader of the orchestra, and I really developed, I think, over the years, just working with a professional orchestra, because they're totally different from amateurs. You know, you don't have to actually show them that much. They are fabulous musicians, and they will play. And I remember Reinhard Schwarz saying to me, Alistair, a lot of the conducting is done with the eyes, just looking at a musician rather than with the hands.
That's a famous, I remember Sir Adrian Bolt saying that.
Yes.
Now we've got a Schubert Lieder, a Schubert song, and in fact one of his very famous and dramatic ones. Alistair, tell us about it.
The Erl King, it's one of my favorite songs, and it's such a dramatic piece. It is a song that actually involves four different characters within one song sung by a single singer. You've got the narrator, you've got the father, you've got the frantic son who's in the father's arms while he's riding through the night on his horse, and then you've got this evil character, the Erl King, that is trying to actually seduce the son and take him away from the father. And the son is frantic, screaming to the father, help me, help me. Father can't see this evil presence. And eventually, at the end, the narrator is saying, we have to get home, we have to get home urgently. And the father arrives at home, and as he stops his horse, the son is lying in his arms, dead. And it's the most amazing song by Goethe. And Schubert took this music at the age of 17. He wrote the song, which is quite unbelievable. Yeah. A 17-year-old that is able to actually achieve this sort of standard of music. And we've got a wonderful singer, Ian Bostridge, accompanied by Julia Strake at the piano.
Bleib ruhig, mein Kind, in Türen blättern. Adlern säuselt der Wind. Willst feil, Knabe, du mit mir gehen? Meine Töchter sollen dich warten schön. Meine Töchter führen die nächtlichen Rhein und wiegen und tanzen und singen dich ein. Sie wiegen und tanzen und singen dich ein. Mein Vater, mein Vater,
that really is one of Schubert's dramatic songs, isn't it?
Fantastic song.
The Earl Koenig.
Wonderful piece.
Ian Bostrich, the tenor there. Mm. Julius Drake, the pianist. And as you said, Alistair, 17 years old to write something like that.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Which is. Anyway, Alistair Coburn is my guest on People of Note this week. We're talking about the Yeoman of the Guard, which, as I said, Alistair, opens on the 10th of August, but they're not that many, five performances.
We're doing five performances. So we've got the 10th of August, that's a Saturday evening at 19:30. And then we're doing Sunday afternoon, the 11th, at 2:30. And then we have a whole week's break. The following week, Friday night, that is the 16th at 19:30. And then Saturday we're doing two performances at 14:30 and 19:30. And that's our final.
With things like this, with five performances, with all the work you put in, they talk about this with Cape Town Opera as well. How do you know how many performances to do? Is it budgetary issues?
It is budgetary to a large extent. I mean, every additional performance you do, there are costs involved, you know, in hiring equipment, the orchestra costs. You are paying the orchestra per session, so that can cost extra. And we looked at this in the Opera House. It's a very, very big venue. And, I mean, can seat up to 1,500 people.
Mm, it is a big
venue. And we've looked traditionally at what did we achieve audience-wise in previous GNSs in the theatre, and secondly also Cape Town Opera, who are now only doing three, four, maybe a maximum of five performances of any opera they did. So we thought, let's actually follow that trend and just keep to a few performances. There would be no way we could actually fill the auditorium for 12, 15 performances like we do for musicals.
Yes, like The Sound of Music running forever.
That's right. Well, that could run for 40, 50 performances.
It will still be full. But I think you've made a good point that The Yeoman of the Guard is actually opera.
It is an opera,
it's
yes.
Not just a light frivolous Gilbert and Sullivan opera.
That's why I'm hoping we can really appeal to our opera-going audiences, yes, too. I think many of them, there is a tendency to look down on Gilbert and Sullivan a bit by the hoi polloi.
Yes,
you know,
it irritates me.
You know, these little topsy-turvy plots and sort of music that is sometimes a little bit sort of, trivial, mm-hmm, which I think was correct for the style of the piece that we're doing. Yeoman is totally different. We, as you and I know, mm-hmm, it is really grand music.
It's grand opera. You know, the one question I want to ask you, Alice, is how do you choose? I mean, the Gilbert and Sullivan oeuvre is so wonderful. I mean, if you asked me now which one I'd like you to put on, I wouldn't know what to say. Well, I'd say The Yeoman of the Guard, which you're doing anyway. But how do you sit down and choose what you're going to do each
year? Look, I think you have to look at the more popular ones. And there are only about four or five, you can say, out of the whole 13 oeuvre that you can say are really popular and will attract audiences. The Mikado, for instance, Pirates of Penzance, HMS Pinafore, maybe the Gondoliers. Mm-hmm. Some of the lesser known works, we did Radigore previously and was a great success.
It didn't
attract very big audiences, whereas 3 years before that we did the Mikado and we were sold out.
Yeah.
So it just shows you what audiences want to see, what they know.
But that was a magnificent production.
It was, yes.
I don't think I've ever seen the GNS Society so grand.
Yeah, we actually took that over to the International Festival in Harrogate in England, and we won some very good awards with that production when they adjudicate all the productions from all over the world.
Now, I can't resist asking you this. What is next? What are we going to see next year?
We've got a committee, and we sit down and we debate what we should do, and we've got various thoughts at the moment. I haven't actually completely decided yet. We put out some feelers to Delro and to other music organizations, their MTI in New York, and asked them about the rights for certain shows. And, of course, we have to look very carefully at the rights costs. You know, the costs of rights are incredibly expensive when you actually take the rand in relation to the dollar.
One forgets that, doesn't one? We forget that there are rights
involved. They're quoting dollars
or
pounds, you know, and then you have to actually multiply by 20, you know, to get your rand. And I've just been looking at one production now, and was something I was keen on. I'm not going to mention what it is, but I have to go and talk to my committee. You're looking at about 600,000 rand in rights only.
Wow.
So,
wow.
You know, when we did the My Fair Lady, the rights were nearly 1 million rand. Gosh. And that's a lot of money for an amateur to pay out.
But again, that was one of your successes.
It was a great
production.
It was a
massive,
yes,
massive success. So, Alistair, we have to go now. Well, I mean, you do anyway. No, let me put that in a way. Time catches up with all of us. And I'm intrigued by your last piece of music that you've chosen, that you're speaking very enthusiastic about. Yeah. What are we going to hear?
We do musicals at GNS. I love musicals. And I was approached earlier this year by Jonathan Walker Kane, who is a director from England. And he had heard about me and found out about me through the GNS. And he asked me if I would be musical director for a production he wanted to do. It's a Lloyd Webber production called Tell Me on a Sunday, a one-woman show. One lady on the stage singing 26 songs for an hour and a quarter.
Wow.
And we had an ensemble of about six pieces, a cello, a guitar, keyboard, and saxophones. And we did this at the old Fugard Theatre, now called the Avalon, and it was a great success. Sean Atterbury, who's actually playing Phoebe for us, was one of the two ladies we used, and alternate with her was Regina Milan, who's playing Elsie. Ah. So both of them actually I've worked with now, and I was totally intrigued by this piece. I didn't know it, and we had some wonderful music in it of Lloyd Webber, and I've chosen one of the songs called Unexpected Song from that. It's sung here by Bernadette Peters, who was one of the great pop singers in the UK, and I think it will be rather nice to end off with that.
Excellent. But before we do that, Alistair, thanks for chatting and giving us some secrets of the mists of Gilbert and Sullivan and the Society. And I, for one, am so looking forward to Yeoman.
Thank you.
And we'll give it lots of publicity on the air.
Thanks very
play
much.
Play some
appreciate
of that lovely music.
Please, I just hope that people come and give it a chance, because they won't be disappointed.
Definitely not. Not with this one. A fast-paced caper with forbidden romances, fantastical plots, and unrequited love unfolds with some surprising twists at the end. That's what they say in the blurb.
Thank you, Roddy.
Alistair Coburn was my guest on People of Note this week, and here is music by Andrew Lloyd Webber.
This is not like me at all. I
People of Note on Fine Music Radio was proudly brought to you by Peter Turin Productions.
101.3 FM. This is Fine Music Radio.